One of my first memories is being in seventh grade, and I was walking to his library, and I didn't read books at all. Then, you know, in school, I was like, books? Who wants to read books? You know, I'm into skateboarding and stuff. So I'm like, well, if I have to read a book right now, I wonder if there's, like, any weird, like, UFO books.
You're listening to The World in Words, a podcast about languages and the people who speak them. I'm Nina Porzucchi, and I'm here today with Patrick Cox.
Hi, Nina.
Hey, Patrick. We're actually not going to be talking about Area 51. Sorry to disappoint you, Patrick.
Phew.
Or aliens. But that was Tom DeLonge. He is one of the lead singers of the pop punk band Blink 182.
Okay.
And Patrick, I wanted you to listen just to the way he speaks.
And all I found was a book that had something about one UFO and the Loch Ness Monster. But either way, it was cool, and it was in my school library. And from that moment forward, it really sparked my interest.
I'm really bad with accents in America. I know these guys are from the West Coast, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the accent itself, that almost sounded like sped up Boston.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Even though that you lived on the, I know you lived on the West Coast for a good deal of time.
Northern California. I lived in Northern California, mm-hmm. but I would, you know, yeah, I was in a kind of college bubble.
So Tom DeLonge is really into aliens, as you just heard, but that's a story for a different podcast. But the
which
way,
I'm very relieved about,
thank
I
God.
Have to say.
but I love
if
that
something
clip,
I know
actually.
Less about than West Coast accents is aliens.
Maybe we should do a podcast about aliens. I don't know. That California surfer twang that you hear, I don't know if you could kind of tell.
A little bit, yeah.
It's like Southern California. It only gets more exaggerated when he sings, so much so that it's become a meme on the internet. People sarcastically refer to his voice as the epitome of something called the pop punk voice. Let me play a little bit and you can hear. All the small things, true care, truth brings. I'll
take one lift, you're right, best trip. Now I can hear it much more when he's singing. You're right. I mean, they really put it on. Again, I think I'm associating it culturally, right? That is very much, to me, sounds like a West Coast bubblegummy, poppy, only vaguely punky. A punk in terms of, like, buzzsaw guitar, but that's it.
Right.
That's it. I don't know if he was the first one to sing in that way, but I remember just turning on the radio back in, what, the 1990s we're talking about?
Late 90s, early aughts.
Right, right. You would hear that kind of sound on the radio an awful lot. Nasal, fast.
Really Southern California. Surfer, skateboard, all that.
I see. Now you're telling me something I don't know.
Well, recently I spoke with this reporter. His name is Dan Nosowitz, and he wrote this article for this journal, Atlas Obscura, and it caught my attention. The title, you'll love this, I made a linguistics professor listen to a Blink 182 song and analyze the accent.
Oh, that's awesome.
So here's the interview I did with him.
I love pop punk, even in the last decade when loving pop punk is like a kind of odd, weird retro thing to do. Not even retro. Retro sounds cool. Loving pop punk is not cool at all. But I do love it, including the older stuff that I grew up with, the Blink 182s and the Green Days and things like that. And then the newer stuff that, you know, Pitchfork refuses to label as pop punk. But
what are they labeling
is.
It? What it,
like noise pop or...
This is Cloud Nothings.
Lo-fi
is...
pop. Yeah, uh-huh. Cloud Nothings and Waves and Gremlin... and male bonding, and there are a ton of bands like that. It's kind of a popular sound now. It starts right now. There's a way I was before. But I can't recall how it was those days anymore. But the label pop punk is very much not popular.
Okay, so lots of people, I'm sure, that are going to listen to this podcast have zero idea what you mean by pop punk.
So pop punk, in my mind, is kind of a subgenre of punk, sort of, or a revitalization of punk, sort of, revival, rather, that took some of the kind of alternative sounds and pasted them onto some of the punk attitudes. So it was similar to the Sex Pistols, or more specifically the Clash, in its kind of attitude, but there was really no, like, political
agenda
motivations
at all.
Behind it. Yeah, there's no agenda. It's like teenage angst is the agenda.
It's like,
I hate my parents, and I hate third period math. It's kind of the agenda. So that kind of stuff started in Berkeley at a venue called the Gilman. That's where bands like Green Day and the Mr. T Experience and Rancid, they all came up through there. And then eventually it kind of spread south to Orange County and Los Angeles and San Diego. And that's where bands like Blink-182 and The Offspring came from. And those bands were such huge, huge mega hits. Like, Blink-182 were
superstars. No, they were enormous.
A super influential band, even if their influence was kind of short, it was very, very powerful.
It was a blink.
Where are you? And I'm so sorry. I cannot sleep. I cannot dream tonight. I need somebody and always. This sick, strange darkness comes creeping on, so haunting every time.
I was taking a road trip with my girlfriend, and we were singing along to Blink-182, and just kind of to make each other laugh, we would do the super exaggerated Southern California accent that Tom DeLonge uses in a lot of Blink-182 songs.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of singing, you know, na na na, it would be na na na, or, you know, I don't care about what you think. And this was just like a way to kind of make each other laugh. And I got to thinking, like, what is going on? This is such a bizarre, like, performative accent. I wonder what's really going on here.
Yeah.
So I just started looking into anyone who had written about linguistics in California.
Uh-huh.
And stumbled on this kind of strange world of people who were also obsessed with California accents for, you know, more academic and much more serious reasons than I am.
Well, first, you also stumbled on, like, a world of people who were obsessed with Tom DeLonge's accent, actually.
Yes. A lot of people will use it on Twitter. They'll use, not a hashtag, but the kind of, like, asterisk voice, and they'll say, you know, pop punk voice, and then they'll use some kind of tweet. Or my favorite one was a Tumblr that's called Tom DeLonge Lyrics that kind of transliterates and ends up writing Blink-182 lyrics in, like, all capital letters in very kind of extended, strange vowel sequences to more realistically portray what he's actually saying.
So describing the accent, I actually grew up in Southern California, so until I read this article,
I could hear it in your voice.
Hey, be nice. I guess until I actually read your article, I had never, ever thought about Blink-182's surfer, Southern California dude, white dude accent before.
Yeah, skater surfer.
Skater surfer, bra accent. But that's kind of what we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Which, for me, I'm from Pennsylvania, and so that kind of accent, like surfers and skaters, was so exotic when I was like a kid, you know? Like, I grew up in suburban Philadelphia where there's like nothing, really. There's good sandwiches, I guess, but that's kind of about it.
You say wooder, so you have your own accent, but
I do. I do say wooder and yo, I guess. But the pop punk accent that I heard was so exotic, and the things that they liked were so exotic. The Vans Warped Tour was so cool. Like, I didn't know how to skateboard. I really wish that I did. I didn't wish enough to actually go out and learn how to skateboard, but I thought it was super cool. And this accent kind of penetrated, I think, a lot of America's attention as, like, oh, this is, like, something, there's something cool happening down there.
Oh, the early aughts. The era of the OC and the hit reality TV show in which Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie did nothing. And skater shoes and a music festival sponsored by skater shoes, the Vans Warped Tour. It was Blink-182's moment. And interesting things were happening linguistically. Dan Nosowitz enlisted Penelope Eckert, a linguist from Stanford University, to listen to Tom DeLonge's strange surfer twang and analyze one Blink-182 song.
I chose First Date, which is off of one of their later albums, which is delightfully titled Take Off Your Pants and Jacket. It's one of my favorite songs. It wasn't a big hit, I don't think, but Tom DeLonge is the lead singer in it. Blink-182 has two vocalists, mm-hmm. and Mark Hoppus, who has kind of a very clean voice, and then Tom DeLonge, who has this super exaggerated, super Southern California nasal pop punk voice. So I wanted to pick a song that Tom DeLonge was the lead singer on, and this one, just every single line has a new gem of crazy accent in it, so I thought it was a good one to pick.
In the car, I just can't wait. You up on our very first date. Is it cool if I hold your hand? Is it wrong if I think it's Linda Dance? Do you like my stupid hair? Would you guess that I didn't know what you wear? I'm just scared of what you think. You make me nervous, so I really can't eat. Let's go.
linguist Penny Eckerd didn't want to come on the podcast. Perhaps listening to First Date over and over was torture enough. But Dan recorded his interview with Penny. The phone tape is a bit scratchy, but her reaction is priceless.
Okay, so I've listened to this song a bunch of times.
Oh, I'm sorry I made you do that.
That's okay. Okay, well, here's what I hear. I mean, it really does sound like somebody's messing around.
So Penny Eckerd thought Dom DeLonge was joking around with his funny singing accent.
I don't think that's totally wrong. I think he sort of is.
Or exaggerating, at least.
Right. Yeah, he's definitely like, I mean, partly because Blink-182 was kind of exporting Southern California culture. So, you know, they rode skateboards in like every music video. Like there was palm trees in every music video. There was a beach in every music video. So if you're going to do that, you might as well like be as Californian as you can, even in your accent. It's a little bit like, I don't know, Johnny Rotten from the Sex Pistols took on a super British accent, like stronger than anyone would reasonably have, to kind of emphasize his kind of, you know, working class roots and what the Sex Pistols were all about. God save the queen. The fascist regime. It made you a moron.
Potential hate bomb. Oh, I got to cut in here. Wait a minute.
Okay.
I'm not so sure that Johnny Rotten reference is like, I think that he just sang the way he spoke.
I think from an American's point of view, it sounds like so over the top.
Yeah,
for
yeah,
me,
yeah,
for my ears, it's like no way he can be speaking like that, really.
Yeah, because the people who they replaced, right, Led Zeppelin and all of those kind of hard rock bands, they would put on their fake American accents. They all came from certain accented regions of Britain, but you'd never hear the accent in their singing. Along comes Rotten and some of these other punk bands, and they just sang as they spoke. It was part of their kind of, you know, authentic shtick.
So that's what he's kind of saying, but what you're saying is they're not overdoing it. That's exactly how they spoke.
Right.
I mean, that's interesting.
And the other funny thing about this is that Lydon, Johnny Rotten, yeah, I think he still lives in Southern California. He moved to Southern California years and years ago. And maybe he divides his time between there and Britain now. But there are now palm trees in his life.
I wonder how his accent has changed. Maybe it's I bet. Like
it still sounds the same.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. He's got this kind of snarly, you know, sardonic drawl. I suppose the drawl may have become a little bit more languid down in Southern California. Or maybe that's just age or cigarettes. I don't know.
Probably cigarettes.
Videos, movies, soundtracks for films
John Lydon, yeah.
Sometimes we perform live gigs.
So he does sound like he sings.
Just
about anything that's available.
Well, Tom DeLonge's vowels line up with a current trend happening in California called the California Shift. I'm apparently guilty of it, too.
The California Shift is a steady movement of vowel sounds, kind of a rotation of vowel sounds that is happening all in concert. So this comes from what's called the Cott-Cott merger.
Mm-hmm.
So in the Northeast or in the Midwest, those two sounds, C-O-T and C-A-U-G-H-T, those two vowel sounds are very different. One is ah, one is aw. In Southern California, for whatever reason, those two are the same sound.
You
would say, I slept on a cot and I caught a fish.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. What's very strange about linguistics is that it kind of works like one of those sliding puzzles where when you move one piece, there's a space behind it and then you have to fill it with something. So if you leave a space for something like the aw sound, which now you're not using because that sounds like ah, then some other vowel sound will kind of mutate and fill that space.
Huh.
So there's this kind of like turning wheel of vowel sounds in California where everything is just slightly off from the way it works in the rest of the country.
The other one point that I thought was interesting was how some of his words sounded like Chicano accent.
Right. So it's not an accent in that, like, it's not like, you know, someone moved here from Mexico and they're, you know, struggling to speak English the way Americans do. This is just an individual accent that sprung up among someone of typically Mexican descent, but born in this country, mother tongue is English. And there's a large Chicano population in Southern California, anywhere near the border, really. and some of the elements of Tom DeLonge's speech, Penny Eckert connected to Chicano, especially the short I sound in words like think, which Tom DeLonge pronounces as think, like a like T-H-E-E-N-K.
That's interesting.
She kind of saw that as likely an element of Chicano culture.
So the pop punk accent, it's not like it just stayed in Southern California. It spread all over the place because Avril Lavigne, she's from Canada and she sounds exactly like all of these SoCal bras.
Yeah, not only that, but Avril Lavigne and Sum 41, which is another Canadian pop punk band, their like music videos also were usually featuring skateboarders in swimming pools with a backdrop of palm trees, which I'm pretty sure
don't exist
in Ontario. But yeah, so Avril Lavigne and Sum 41, the lead singer's name is Derek Whibley, which is just a cool fact that I happen to know offhand. They both demonstrate very similar accents to the Southern California guys. And I thought that was just another example of, these singers from wherever they are, they just want to emulate Tom DeLonge. That's a cool vocal sound. That's what you do if you're singing pop punk. But it turns out that that's not really the whole story. In Canada, a very similar shift to what's happening in California is also happening pretty much everywhere west of Quebec.
The Cot-Cot merger?
Yeah, the Cot-Cot merger happened in Canada. And up there, it's called the Canadian shift rather than the California shift. And it's very similar. It's not totally the same, but the Cot-Cot merger happened there and had a pretty similar effect. So Avril Lavigne's accent probably naturally is pretty close to Tom DeLonge's.
Why? Why is it shifting in California and why is it shifting in Canada but not the rest of the U.S. necessarily?
I asked that too, and linguistics people don't seem to know why any of this happens. They know what happens and they know how it happens, but they don't seem to know why this stuff happens.
That's the big question. So what about these new bands that are not pop punk but are pop punk, like the Cloud Nothings? Have you noticed any sort of shift in the accent for these newer groups?
Yeah. So Cloud Nothings, the singer and principal songwriter is a guy named Dylan Baldy, and he's from Cleveland, and his accent changes a lot, song to song and album to album. Sometimes it is very British. Sometimes it's kind of featureless. Sometimes it's a little bit Southern California, a little bit sneering, a little bit Tom DeLonge, which, you know, I appreciate.
I take umbrage at the fact that you just called the California, Southern California accent sneering.
This is other people's words, not my words.
Okay,
I'm just a journalist. I just repeat what other people say.
Oh, as they all say, I'm just a journalist. Just record what I hear.
I find it mellifluous and lovely.
Thank you so much.
Wow, he thinks that sounds sneering, eh?
Yeah, he thinks that the California accent sounds sneering. I think he's a little jealous.
Yeah, I got to say, I don't hear that. I mean, like, you know, back to Johnny Rotten, that is sneering. There's plenty of people who say, even Mick Jagger in his day did a little bit of sneering, but I don't hear it in that kind of power poppy, nasally singing. It
doesn't sound sneering. More annoying than anything. It's just sing-songing. I don't know about sneering, but I think it's a good.
Yeah, yeah. There's almost a sort of like high-pitched like that rather than a kind of, you know, sneer. I don't know.
That's even worse. Aggravating.
Sorry. Now two people have insulted you, the Southern California.
All right.
Wherever punk goes, it mutates into something different. So in its original incarnation in New York, it was this kind of grungy, Lower East Side kind of tight 3-minute pop song. When it went to the UK, it took on reggae influences and became heavily political. And then when it eventually, a couple decades later, moved back to the States, in the Bay Area, it became poppy and fun and goofy, but still retained a lot of the reggae influences from the UK. And then eventually when it moved further south, it totally got rid of the reggae influences and became just kind of alterna pop, loud guitars, power chords, simple constructions.
But the accent, so it goes from New York City to London, and you can, like, if you listen to The Clash, it's like, wow, there, you can hear the accent. And then the accent, then what I found interesting is Green Day, for example, you quote Billy Joe Armstrong as saying, I'm an American guy faking an English accent, faking an American accent.
Do you have the time to listen to me whine about nothing and everything all at once?
Yeah, Billy Joe and some of the other singers, Tim Armstrong, a little bit from Rancid. Definitely some of their vowel sounds were sort of British sounding. They were largely non-rhotic. Rhotic is a rhoticity is a linguistic term that refers to keeping R's at the end of words or dropping them. So something like however. Mm-hmm. Americans are rhotic, which means that we keep the R's. But people from the UK would say however. That was the worst British accent anyone has ever done.
I won't hold it against you.
Thanks. They drop the R's. And Billy Joe and a lot of the other Bay Area punk singers drop their R's.
She says it's like a sex that's bringing me down. I went to a whore. He said my life's a bore. Joke with my wife and pussy and bringing her down.
So you spoke with Christopher Applegren from Lookout Records, and he had a different theory than all this linguistic stuff about this pop punk accent and how it came to pass.
Chris Applegren, who ran Lookout Records, which is the first label that published Green Day and a lot of the Bay Area early pop punk stuff, his theory was really simple and made me feel kind of silly for going so deep into this linguistic stuff. His theory was just that in a lot of punk venues, the sound is terrible. The musicians, like, as kind of part of their identity, don't often really know or care about playing their instruments well. Everything is kind of a battle just to make yourself heard. The guitarist wants to be the loudest, the bass player wants to be the loudest, the drummer wants to be the loudest, and the singer also wants to be the loudest. And a way to kind of cut through all that noise would be to use a really sharp kind of nasal singing voice. And his theory was that this was just a weapon, just a way to make yourself heard over the din and in these kind of horrible basement venues.
It is a nasally sound, but it still doesn't get to the way he clearly, Tom DeLonge is clearly pronouncing things differently, where there's a clear pronunciation, even if he has the high-pitched nasally voice. There is something different that's happening there.
Yeah, definitely. There's certainly interesting linguistic stuff on top of the kind of weaponized nasal singing.
So did you try to get in touch with him, Tom?
I didn't. He did retweet a link to the story with just the, I think he just wrote with like dot 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 after it, which I don't know what that means. I hope he liked it. I'm, you know, Tom, I'm a big fan. Love your work.
Let's go, don't wait. Honest, let's make.
Alas, Tom DeLonge turned down my interview request. I suppose he's too busy investigating alien encounters to go on a podcast about language. I won't pout, though, because I did speak with another musician, Jane Setter, about why we so easily take on different accents when we sing. Jane also happens to be a phonetics expert at the University of Reading in the UK.
Listening to myself singing is interesting. If you hear a recording of yourself singing, you think, oh, I didn't know I did that. So this whole business about whether people are singing in different accents is quite interesting, I think, because you wonder why you've learned something a particular way.
So we're going to hear more from Jane and others in next week's podcast, and we're going to talk a little bit about why we sing in accents and why it's easier. I feel like it's easier to adapt or adopt an accent when you're singing for some reason rather than when I'm just talking. Like, I can't imitate your voice, but perhaps if we both sang, I could... You know.
Do you want to give it a try? maybe that's true. I mean, maybe, you know, the karaoke, we've all had those karaoke moments where we've at least kidded ourselves that we're singing in a certain accent. So, yeah, maybe that is true. But certainly, like, after Johnny Rotten made it sort of the thing to do to sing in that kind of really street London Cockney way, there were a whole load of pretenders after him, you know, some of them that came from middle-class homes that didn't really sound that way at all. And so what began as this sort of authentic move then became fake. And I suppose you could say it sort of reached its zenith with Billy Joe Armstrong doing his American guy faking an American accent, faking a British accent, faking an American accent. But at least he fessed up to it, which there's a kind of authenticity there.
Right. So we're going to play a lot of clips next week. There's some interesting ways in which singers have done it really poorly. Or have done it so... yes, or have done it so well that they've pissed off their own compatriots. So next week, more about singing and accents.
Oh, can't wait.
So that's all. This is The World in Words. And okay, you might not be the biggest fan of pop punk, but if you like what you're hearing on the podcast, please, please, please leave us a review on iTunes. Right, Patrick? Leave us a review.
Review, just a line or two. 5 stars.
I'm Nina Porzucchi. I'm here with...
Patrick Cox.
Catch us on Twitter. I'm at Porzucchi. That's P-O-R-Z-U-C-K-I.
And I'm at Patrick Cox, P-A-T-R-I-C-O-X.
Thanks for listening.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
You had me listening to pop punk songs this morning. My head is sort of swimming in like Blink 182. I was like, oh my God.
Well, you're welcome for that.
Yeah.
What do you think? Do you think it holds up?
I mean, that's hard to say because in some ways the music, it just evokes a period of time in your life. Is it good music? Is it not? I don't know. But it does like hit that sweet spot in one's life or one's memory.
Yeah, it's really good road trip music, I find.
Is First Date really your favorite Blink 182 song? Really?
It's one of them. Yeah, really? one of my favorite songs. I mean, I think partly it's because I was, God, I don't know, maybe 15 when Enema of the State came out. And I think I just played it so much that, like, I mean, like you mentioned, like, I can't even tell if those songs are good anymore. they're just like sounds from my past.
They're like, pure nostalgia.
Yeah, exactly.